The Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. is a quiet place. Walking through the place is a very somber experience. One sees lots of images, people with yellow star armbands huddled together, being herded from one place to another, and well-dressed, young, blonde, uniformed men and women giving the Nazi salute. It's hard to look at the pictures and to truly and deeply believe that people on all sides of the story are children of God. Sometimes it's too much and one wants to flee out the door. At the same time, one feels how deeply important it is to force oneself to continue through the museum. It's impossible not to be stunned by the brutal fact that humankind could do something as beastly as the Holocaust. Almost every visitor to the museum speaks about the shoes. You see, there's a pile of shoes on the floor that a visitor looks down on from an elevated walkway. They're heaped up in a pile in the corner. They are the shoes from the people of Lublin, a city in Poland, and those people were sent to a death camp in Majdanek. When the people were forced from their homes, they were told that they were being taken someplace much nicer. And so some of the shoes are women's high heels, because the women wanted to be dressed properly for arriving at their splendid new home. Jumbled together with these special occasion 2-inch heels are men's shoes, children's shoes, and baby shoes. Each shoe tells a story of a real person who lived and died and whose life was taken before it was time. Little scuffs on the children's shoes tell of falls and skinned knees. Worn soles try to tell of making it possible to get as much wear as possible out of those shoes. And those heartbreaking high-heeled shoes scream the huge lie that those women were told. And the baby shoes? Well, they're nothing but tears to describe the baby shoes. The shoes help us understand why, over the years, there's been so much devotion around relics. A scrap of fabric from a garment supposedly worn by Jesus, or the Shroud of Turin, a splinter of the true cross, a piece of the crown of thorns. People want to feel a powerful connection with the profoundly human Jesus who lived this story of suffering, this passion. The passion of Jesus begins with joy and excitement, but in no time, it forces us to look into the mirror at ourselves. We find ourselves as members of the crowd, each one of us capable of beastly behavior, of denying the humanity of others. So for just a moment, feel yourself a part of that crowd once again, frightened for what the volatile Romans might do next, demanding the death of one who was causing agitation among the Roman occupiers would make sense, even if profoundly wrong. We know we have to do something to preserve our lives and keep the so-called peace of Rome, the Pax Romana, anything to avoid a sudden massacre breaking out in the crowd. And if that sober realization were not enough, we have to grapple with the fact that each one of us is capable of being Peter and saying, "Him? I don't know him." The horrible truth is, we are capable of nullifying one another, Like the museum, sometimes we just want to flee far away, but we know how deeply important it is for us to experience this truth. It's impossible not to be stunned by the understanding that we can be part of that bloodthirsty crowd. This difficult self-examination is the work of today. It's the beginning of the Passion of Jesus. But it's only a part of the first act of a drama that we have come to know as the greatest story ever told. The second act takes place on Maundy Thursday, the third on Good Friday, and the fourth, the Great Vigil of Easter and Easter Sunday. This passion story is the very corner of our faith. If you only hear the first and last acts, you will miss a great deal, even though we all know the bare bones of the story. The next acts that are about to unfold are full of experiences that we can touch to help us experience that for which we have no adequate words. Tangible things, like shoes or relics. But this passion drama has different tangible things: water, bread, wine, fire, and the powerful scent of the garden. There will be much visual power in darkness and light, audible power in music, both mournful and triumphant. So many vivid opportunities for experiencing the passion of Jesus. Don't miss it. I urge you to come to the services this week to be a participant in the acts of this play, so that the triumph of the last act will sing out its glorious power in your soul because you've taken the time to take this journey. If you're going to be away this week, find some other church to catch these in-between acts, because this passion is being experienced wherever you might be. This story is playing everywhere. It's Jesus's story, and it's ours too, because since it happened, we are eternally changed. We have never been the same. Thanks be to God. Amen.